Hi, it's Joe Lowry. Welcome to another edition of the Global Lithium Podcast. My guest today from Halmec Lithium in Russia is Pavel Galchenko. Russia isn't discussed very often in the lithium narrative, but Russia's lithium history actually goes back at least seven decades, back to the time of the Cold War when, like the United States, Russia wanted to produce lithium hydroxide as a very needed component in their nuclear weapons efforts. I learned very early in my career about the two major Russian lithium production facilities, one in Novosibirsk and one in Krasnoyarsk. Pavel's company, Halmec Lithium, has much more recent origins, and you'll hear how they were helped to get started in the lithium business by a friend of mine who used to work with me at FMC Lithium, now Livent, Stephen Lewis. It's an interesting anecdote, one of many that Pavel tells well during the podcast. Before they produced lithium, Halmec supplied various products from Livent to the Russian market. Later on, they also traded lithium hydroxide from the Department of Energy stockpile via a company called Toxco, which was part of the legacy of the American nuclear program. As time went on, they did business with Albemarle, with SQM, and most recently have sourced lithium carbonate for their hydroxide plant in Russia from Toyota Tsusho, which is, of course, the Orocobre material from Argentina. Although Russia is not a country rich in lithium resources, they are deep in lithium technology from many decades of processing experience. We will hear about that, and we'll also hear about Halmec's expansion plans, how they plan to be able to process either brine-based material or hard rock-based material, and how they are targeting participation in the battery industry via the coming EU battery supply chain build-out. Halmec has done an excellent job of building a business based on partnering with each of the major producing entities in the Western Hemisphere. From my perspective of 30 years in the industry, I have not seen a company, aside from Ganfeng, leverage the partnership model more effectively than Halmec. This was truly one of the most enjoyable podcast recordings I have done. Pavel's a very engaging individual. So without further ado, Pavel Galchenko.
I would say objection. I would like to say that.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Zalandez, a brine field services company providing real-time, actionable data that is saving both exploration companies and producers money in both drilling and completion activities. Find them at www.zelandez.com. Welcome to the Global Lithium Podcast, Pavel.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, everyone, for listening to me.
As we normally do, I like to start off with what we call the backstory. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? And how did you find your way to lithium?
Oh, that's going to be a long story, because before I came to lithium, me with my partners, it was a really, really long life for me. If you don't mind, I can start the story.
Okay.
Okay, good. So, in general, I'm over 40 years old. I was born in the Russian Federation in the far east part of it, near the Vladivostok.
Oh, really?
Because my father and the whole family was mining engineers. My grandfather, he'd been searching for the gold in Irkutsk, in Aldan area.
Sure.
Since he was like 10 years old. And then he became one of the ministers of tin production in former Soviet Union. And my father and his older brother, they both graduated from Moscow Mining Prospecting Academy in 1964, and both become mining engineers. So my father spent about 10 or 11 years working in the far east of Russia. So that's the place when I come up.
So when I went skiing in Hokkaido, I wasn't very far from where you grew up.
Exactly, exactly. Okay. That's true. So, and then my family moved back to Moscow, and my father had been working for a state planning committee for rare metals. I went to school in Moscow for almost 10 years, and except 3 years, which my family spent in Murmansk, because my father had been working in Murmansk for geological organization belonging to the government as well. And then I came back to Moscow, spent one more year, and then my father said, oh, that's the time when you would like to see the world around you. And he found a student exchange program and sent me to the U.S.
Oh.
Corvallis, Oregon. Corvallis, Oregon.
Corvallis, Oregon. Okay.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
I got an absolutely great host family. And on that time, I was the exchange student number 18. That's the Schwartz family. He was a postman, and she was a volunteer in exchange program. So as she told me later that she chose the best application she got. So in 1993, I got to the United States as an exchange student. I've been waiting for my host family in the airport for 6 hours. And that's not because they didn't come. That's because we didn't recognize each other, because we sent best pictures of ourselves to each other, and we'd be sitting just across of each other and not recognizing for 6 hours. Then he gets, are you Pavel from Moscow? I said, yes. Okay, they picked me up, took me in the car, and I came to the Corvallis, Oregon. That was my second place for education. So I had an idea to stay there in Oregon State. Finally, I decided that I also want to be a mining engineer. So I went back to Moscow, and in 5 years, I graduated from Moscow Prospecting Academy as well. My specialty is underground mining of non-ferrous metals and rare metals. So I'm working not too far away from what I've been studying to.
Yeah, closer than a lot of people that I have on the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. At that point of time, my older brother Bill already running some trading business in Moscow. He took me, invite me to the office, and after the graduation, I start working for him. And at the same part, he'd been working together with our existing partner, with Dmitry Suhinin. So since 2001, we're working together. And in the beginning, we created a trading company who've been trading with a lot of different things. And at some point of time, lithium hydroxide become one of the products which we start trading.
Okay.
We've been buying it from Lithium from the United States. That was the old stocks of the U.S. government.
Lithium. So the Adams family.
Yeah, exactly. So we've been buying some of those stocks and selling to the grease producers in Russia. Then at some point of time, we went for some other businesses. We went to Italy. And we decided to find someone who's going to supply lithium hydroxide to us as well. And we found the FMC Lithium with Mr. Steven Lewis, who said, oh, Russian company, I would like to meet you. See you in this pizzeria not far away from the train station in Milan. The next 2 days we met, and we had about 50 minutes to discuss because he had a train hitting back. I had a very important question for myself. I would need to buy one container, but at that point of time, I had no really money to pay it in front. I said, oh, we'd like to buy some hydroxide, and we would like the post payment. Steven said, no problem. You got the container. Shake my hands and walk away. And since that time, my company is actually in the lithium business. So thank
really?
You very much to Mr. Steven Lewis, who once believed us and made the first step towards to us.
Well, a shout out to Steven Lewis, who actually does listen to the podcast. He's been retired now for about 6 years. But, he's a good man.
Does he listening?
Yeah, he listens. So.
Okay, good. I will give him a shout out after it. So. This was the beginning of our career, and at some point of time, we became, I would say, a sole agent of FMC Lithium in Moscow, in Russia. We've been selling lithium hydroxide, chloride, carbonate, and butyl lithium.
Yes.
At some point of time, when the whole market is just move around, and the market, the most important class become who is producing batteries. And FMC told, hey guys, unfortunately, we're producing too much battery grade, so we need to sell it to the battery production. If you will be able to find the lithium hydroxide in some other places, would be great. If not, we will try to support you. At that point of time, we went trying to buy material from Albemarle.
Yeah.
We've been trying to buy from SQM. We actually had pretty good business with SQM on the lithium hydroxide.
You're very popular at the lithium conference, but outside of the lithium people don't really, the press never talks about lithium in Russia or...
Because now there are not too much lithium in Russia in general. If you try to compare us with Chile, there's no lithium in Russia. But if you try to compare us with China, probably no lithium in Russia. But we can find a lot of good things about Russian lithium, because let's get back to the 1950s, when actually all the major lithium production started in the United States. And I would say that the factories, which is Rockwood and FMC in North Carolina, they've been working almost for the same thing. They've been working for the government. And at the same time in Russia, they created two factories who've been dealing with lithium. They created Krasnoyarsk chemical plant.
Yes.
Who
yes.
In the beginning been producing lithium hydroxide, different grades. And they've been sending this lithium hydroxide to another plant, which is Novosibirsk, NCCP. Yep. They've been actually producing the lithium metal. I'm not sure that I should tell all the things around this lithium at that time, but definitely been produced to defend own countries from both sides.
Yeah. Okay. So, we can skip the Cold War if you want to. That's really why everybody got into the business.
Yeah, so they've been producing lithium products, and actually, as I know, the Krasta has been producing 6,000-7,000 tons of lithium hydroxide and moving all these quantities to Novosibirsk, and Novosibirsk has been producing lithium metal. And lithium metal, the catalyst grade and high-quality grade, like battery grade. If we're talking about the Russian history of lithium, the history is very, very long. But at some point of time, when the prices on the market dropped down, below $4, it was stopped be interesting for Krasnoyarsk producing from spodumene, from their own spodumene, and they start buying material in Australia or some other place. Right now, and even 5, 6, 7 years ago, I believe they stopped producing from spodumene, and right now they do only the conversion from carbonate to hydroxide. About 6, 7 years ago, we've been working a lot with Krasnoyarsk chemical plant, because we had some tolling programs, because they were small, because long time ago it belongs to the government. It's been belonging to the same structure as NCCP belongs now. But then they sold it to the people, yeah. And the company came and bought the Krasnoyarsk and still organizing the lithium business there as well. As I know now, they're working quite good. They cooperate with one huge lithium company who supply them carbonate, they're supplying hydroxide to the market. So seems like they have very good cooperation and they're producing high quality product.
Yeah, I mean, they have SQM's name on their website. So
yeah, let's talk about it as well. Yeah. So at the point where we realized that we already have trading business, we have partners who waiting from us hydroxide for their grease production in Russia, and we don't have material, we decided, what if we look into the production of hydroxide, maybe in the smaller volumes, and it's already been a period when hydroxide was not really available in the market, but was a lot of carbonate. In 16 months, we created a project to build the hydroxide factory to produce hydroxide from carbonate. And in 16 months, we evaluated, and in January 2016, we actually start production. We produced first hydroxide. That was absolutely the right time to start, because we've been selling material. It was like 70 degrees when we were loading on the trucks. So right after the production, goes straight to the customers.
And yeah, 2016, I sold a lot of hydroxide from China, and it was all $28,650 for any contract that started in 2016.
Very good time to start. Very good time to start. So, as soon as we've been trading a lot with lithium products, we had ability to buy carbonate, we need hydroxide, and we start producing to close the Russian market, to sell it on the Russian market. And when we actually started, we realized that we can sell something abroad as well. And finally, we end up at that point of time with the factory. We've been designed and built for 6,000 tons of lithium hydroxide.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we were not able to make 6,000 tons in the beginning, because the startup period was quite long for us. And we've been doing a lot of job to feed the quality, in the beginning, even the technical grade. But finally, we catch the point how to produce it. And, by the end of 2016, we've been producing, I would say, very good technical grade, and already starting our efforts to produce the battery grade.
Did you have outside technical help, or was this all self-learned?
No, it's everything is self-learned, absolutely everything. The idea is that one of my partners, Mitya Suhinin, he is very good at chemistry, and he's just like a driver for all these processes. And we hired some institutes in Russia who created technology, because we're using usual lime technology. And it was created by one of the Russian institutes. We spent about 6 to 7 months to run it in real and get the feedback from the production to see what we need to change in equipment, in the technology, to get a high-quality battery grade. And the idea is that right now we've changed a lot of evaporating equipment, changed a lot of things for drying, for cleaning of the solution to get the clean hydroxide. And I would say that today is 2020, and we're producing about 90% of the material is the battery grade. So
when you say battery grade, that is according to whose spec? I mean, because that's a tricky thing with battery, because everybody kind of wants something different.
Difficult what to say.
Well, did you take a spec? Did you take a spec that was out there, say FMC spec or Gangfen spec, and say if we can make that?
We can follow this. We can produce specification almost anyone, because right now in our production we have not only the battery grade, we have high purity grade.
I saw that. I was on your website this morning and looked at your sodium level, which is pretty good.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. The story why we came to this battery grade, because when we finally realized that we need to produce more and more, all carbonate from the market was gone, because the battery grade carbonate was also expensive and difficult to get it. Right now, I'm able to say that probably on the lithium market right now, our partner number one, that's Toyota, who is supplying us carbonate.
Yeah.
And we're getting all grades of carbonate from Toyota and use it to produce battery grade at our factory.
Can you take primary grade, the 97% grade,
yes,
and make battery grade, or do you use that for your industrial grade? And
no, we do the battery grade out of it.
You should become a consultant, because maybe you have to help Toyota Sushio in Japan.
If they will ask, we'll surely be ready to help them, but they never asked us by now. Actually, we have very good relations with Toyota, because we've been inviting them many times on our factory. They've been visiting, and we've been doing some technical discussions. So, but they know everything what they need to do by themselves, I'm sure.
Well, Aoki-san, of course, had a history with Russia.
I respect him.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's why you are very familiar with everybody supplying. Start off with FMC. You moved a couple other guys. Now you're with the newest producer. Right now, the prices are quite attractive, though, for you. But if you look out and you have the kind of EV growth people are talking about, the carbonate prices are likely to climb back up. What do you do in that situation?
I'm sure always we'll get a chance to find material which is not the battery grade, or will not be able to use in the battery grade production. Because a lot of junior miners who is on the way, a lot of projects, who always will have some material which don't fit the specification.
Startup material, especially. When they start up, they produce a lot of material that they can't.
1 or 2 years. Yeah. 1 or 2 years, usually.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that, because a lot of people don't believe that. A lot of people don't realize how hard it is to start up a new lithium operation from a greenfield.
And absolutely. Very difficult.
So you should actually have a lot of, you have new suppliers coming. Every junior is a candidate to be your new best friend.
To be honest, we've been talking to a lot of them, but due to this COVID situation around the world, many of them postponed their projects who've been talking to. But in general, we're expecting that the material carbonate of quality we need for our production probably will be always on the market. And I am pretty sure in our relationship with Toyota, because they've been supplying material to us, they are supplying it now, and from our conversation, we see that we'll get this material in the future as well.
Well, so, when they start up in Japan, it may get a little tighter, because their expansion,
they will produce more.
Okay, you may have more faith than I do, but yeah. if it's not them, I get your point. It'll be somebody, because there every new project is going to go through a learning curve and create a product that if you could take the original product Toyota Tsusho had, the 97%, and make even high grade industrial grade out of that. Because what's going to happen in 2022, by my thinking, and I'd like to get your thoughts on the market, is I think prices are going back up to the old levels, to the 2016 levels, because if EV penetration gets to 6, 7, 8%, it's going to put a lot of pressure on the existing hydroxide and carbonate capacity.
It is, but to be honest, I really want the prices to go up, because that's going to be my revenue, my turnover, everything. But to be honest, I don't believe it will go that high. I don't know why. I don't have any improvements of my thinking, but I think it shouldn't go higher than $12 to $14 at some point of time and at the peak of it. Because
are you talking about carbonate?
People will be bringing volumes constantly, absolutely constantly. As soon as you will see the prices are going up, next 6, 7 months, the project will be growing like a mushroom.
Well, that's unfortunately, I guess maybe we don't agree on that, because if you look at, it's easy to bring a spodumene mine online. It's much harder. Look at SQM's struggle in the Atacama with their expansion. You benefit from their expansion because they've had more trouble making battery quality since they tried to expand, which is good for you. But I think the fact now that the price in Korea and Japan is still over $11,000 for carbonate,
it is,
an indication that when things get even tighter, that price will go up. I think the big impact on you may be that hydroxide doesn't sell at a premium anymore. It gets like the old China model. In the old China model, hydroxide sold for less than carbonate because there was less lithium in it. And the Western guys didn't subscribe to that because they were using carbonate to make their hydroxide, but the Chinese weren't. As long as you have a low grade that can't be sold in a battery, carbonate, you're going to make money.
This is true. This is true. But to make this money, I need to make few more steps. I need to go qualification on major producers who will be buying battery grade, because the Greece market is not growing like this.
Right.
Growing only the battery market. And this is one of the objectives for Helmic Lithium, for our team, that we're trying to go through the evaluation process on the all major cathode makers. This is extremely difficult process. We've been lucky to get one evaluation done.
I would assume that it's not an Asian company that you're qualified with.
But it's a very good company.
Yeah, no. They're a big producer.
We would like to thank our sponsor, Zolandez, who prides itself on providing a new way of doing things in the lithium brine space. Recently, a junior lithium explorer in Argentina was able to save up to 20% in their exploration costs through the use of Zolandez technology services. To learn more, visit Zolandez.com. That's Zelandez.com.
I think the last time I saw you, I asked you a question about shelf life, and I think that question might have come from that company. Yeah, I think for you to be qualified there is a huge step, because they're a big producer. I mean, I think honestly the biggest challenge you may have is that your capacity is too small, because some of the bigger cathode makers don't even want to talk to Livent right now, because they don't think Livent's got the raw material capacity to ensure their hydroxide capacity runs, and their hydroxide capacity is actually fairly large.
I would say objection. I would like to say this.
That's why we do the podcast, so you can object.
Yeah. 6,000 tons of helmic lithium production capacity. This is already history. And we made a small booklet like this. I'll be able to share with that. And it says that in 2020, our production capacity, I'm not saying that how much we already produced. I'm saying the rate
of capacity. Okay.
11,000 tons for today. Because for the last 2 years, we changed a lot of equipment which we used in the beginning. And our crystallization and evaporation system easily shows us 11,000 tons today. And if I will come closer, I can do up to 12 to 13,000 not doing anything.
Do you crystallize twice or just once?
I wouldn't tell it's a secret, but we do the battery grade in one crystallization step.
Okay. Well, all right. Let me ask you another question. What do you do with the impurities that you draw off? Do you produce any carbonate as a byproduct, or are you just?
No. We don't produce carbonate. That was our major problem. What to do with those impurities?
Yeah.
And finally, we found one very nice place not far away from our factory where we're moving it out.
Okay. I won't tell anybody if you don't.
No. I can show you this place, but unfortunately, I cannot tell you what we're doing to get it out. That was what thing we've been doing for the last 1 year. And the idea that a lot of people know how to remove it, but we found a way how to remove it and not stop the production process. And I think that's very important for us. And this is one of the reasons why we're taking a primary grade of Toyota, and our factory runs 24 hours per day. It's not stopping producing material, and impurities doesn't go to the final product.
As you talk to different cathode makers, I think you're going to have a lot more opportunity because the cathode business is going to continue to expand, and you're going to have ultimately, I think, some potential customers closer to you to the west, and not very far.
So not really far.
About two days truck,
and it's there.
So when you're talking to potential battery customers, cathode customers, what is the biggest challenge for your production of their requirements?
The cathode makers, which we've been dealing with for the past time, the challenge for us almost everything, starting from the pallets. Because we've been focused on the grease market.
Sure.
And we've been using one kind of pallets, and then we came to the battery market. We realized that we need to use different things, which looks nice, which doesn't give you any dust, and they're not sleepy, so many, many things. To enter to the battery market, first of all, we worked on the packing. We worked on the pallets. And the major things was on the impurities, potassium, sodium, and magnetic impurities. Yes. And magnetic impurities was the biggest challenge for us, because in the beginning, when the first cathode maker asked them, hey guys, what is your MMI? We said, oh, we will check. Hang up the phone, said, hey guys, who knows what is MMI? Who knows what is MMI? For a very long time, we couldn't find a technology how to measure it, because everybody wants to get good numbers, but nobody's saying how to measure it. They said, oh, tell us how you measure. And we spent a lot of time to find, create, and realize how correctly measure it and get the same numbers with all major producers of cathodes. Right now, in our specification, we can write below 50, but in general, we can produce 5, 7, 8
PPB. And what are you using for magnetic separation?
We use magnetic filters, the dry magnetic filters, which is involved almost in all parts of the process. And to fit this specification, we remove some metal parts from the production, especially on the packing. And we do very strict control of the people who is involved in packing, because any person who comes when packing the battery grade, He goes through the magnets, takes everything, changes the gloves, everything possible to take away the smallest part. And it gives us a result. We have magnets everywhere.
Are your magnets coming from Russia or are they coming from somewhere else?
Most equipment which we use in Russian equipment.
Okay.
We've been trying to find it around the world. We've been talking to the major guys who's producing it, the electrical one, the statical one, all of them. And then we found a company in Russia who said, hey, guys, we can provide you everything you need. They created equipment for us, which now gives us 5-6 ppb on our MMI.
When you're looking at the future, how do you view, I mean, you make, say you're making 12,000 tons of hydroxide. How much of that will stay in the Russian market? How much of that will go overseas?
Russian market is very, very small. So before, that was only grease production. But now, one of our partners in Russia, which is Novosibirsk plant, NCCP, we have very good relations with them because they are producing high-quality battery-grade metal, the catalyst-grade metal, and we have joint program with them, supplying them high quality and very low impurities hydroxide to use in the production for that. They're planning to grow a lot. I would say times. If right now they're producing about 250 tons of metal every year, they promise to grow. And they said it's going to be not the percentage, they're going to grow twice or maybe three times. And that's going to be for us one of the major clients in Russia to buy hydroxide. Right now we're in a discussion because we've been creating a very special grade for them, which will allow them to produce high-quality metal quite quick.
Are they converting it to chloride first?
To be honest, I don't know.
Because that was the old that was the old FMC process. That's why FMC made double crystal, was in order to make low-sodium chloride to make battery-quality lithium metal.
And unfortunately, those guys, because they belong to Rugarmi, they don't tell too much. Asking a lot of questions, but they don't tell too much.
Well, I find that interesting that you have such good relationships with the other producers. Good, because that isn't always the case inside a country. So
yeah, because we don't intersect our ways only to cooperate, because they don't produce hydroxide, we do. They need hydroxide. Sometimes our clients need some metal. We are happy to supply. So for us, they are a market to sell our hydroxide. So only cooperation, no
rivalry. How big is the lithium hydroxide for grease market in Russia?
I would say 600 tons.
600, that, wow.
600 tons. This is the hydroxide for grease right. Application.
No wonder you need to focus on battery.
Definitely. But actually the world market on grease also not really growing fast. Doesn't give you times. So to produce just hydroxide, a lot of people are producing just hydroxide right now. So I'm sure they will be able to supply to almost any grease producer in the world with their quality. But to supply right quality to the battery makers, to the cathode makers, that's a challenge. And we would like to participate in this game, and we would like to produce, I would say, one of the best material on the market. That's our target, to produce high quality battery grade.
So when you talk about the other two lithium related plants in Russia, you're really the leader in hydroxide now. Is that a fair statement?
I don't like to make myself always first. We do producing high quality hydroxide, but the other lithium producers, they're good as well. Otherwise, they wouldn't have such strong relationship with the, I would say, number one lithium company in the world.
Well, okay. You know, it's a funny thing that this other lithium company we're talking about, many of their customers request that they send the Russian material, not the material they make in another place outside of Russia.
Let's look at the Krasnoyarsk is a very old plant with very high skilled technical staff, especially their chief engineer, and I'm sure that they're producing perfect material, perfect hydroxide. And we've been testing it. Very good material. No problems with that.
When you got into this business and you saw there was already an historic Russian company that made great product, what gave you the feeling that you could be successful in a small market?
Because we didn't see them really on the market in Russia. And for us, Russia was the target. And at that point of time, we saw that they're on the market for one single or two companies who is dealing with them. And we realized that we still can be present on the market. At the time when we were sole agent for hydroxide for FMC Lithium, we've been covering 95% of the Russian market. And this at the time when the Krasnoyarsk was running. So they were not really interested in the Russian market. They had enough what to do without it.
Yeah, when I first moved to Japan, which was 20 years ago, the second week I was there, our FMC's joint venture partner in Japan was also buying some Russian material because per our agreement, they could buy a certain amount from another company. And that's when I first met them. And, you know, they made a good product. It was always the packaging people hated. The product was good. It was always the packaging.
I'm sure right now people can bring the good packaging to the market as well. Now the good packaging is the big bags.
Yeah, they also made an excellent quality of lithium metal, which was important. When you look at the market now and you see what's happening in the world with electric vehicles and with energy storage, where do you see Helmec in 5 or 10 years in terms of your position in the market? And do you make any other products or do you stick with one thing?
I'm sure we'll be sticking to one thing, to lithium hydroxide. To be honest, we see ourselves in some of the chains of the supply for European market, because in Chile, we met a very nice friend of ours, Mr. Daniel Jimenez,
yeah, which told us
one thing which I still remember. He told that you need to play on natural market for you. And then we realized that as soon as we're located only 200 kilometers away from Moscow and we're close to Europe, I would say the Europe is a natural market for us. Because we are so close, probably you won't find the other lithium hydroxide producer closer to Europe than we are right now.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, right now you are by far the closest to where, right now, if you look at the development of the EV supply chain in Europe, you're going to see battery factories before you see cathode factories. Cathode will probably continue in large part to come from Asia, but eventually you will have a lot more cathode capacity in Europe than your hydroxide capacity. So
definitely. And that's why right now we're trying to knock on every door where we see the sign cathode maker and trying to offer our product. And we're going through the evaluation process. We're supplying samples. We're trying to supply it to everyone we can find, sure, including the majors. As I mentioned to you, we would like to be in the chain of the supply. But from our side, having a factory producing even 11 or like 12,000 tons, we will be not really a player for that, because we're going to be too small even for one company, and we need to do something. And that was one of the reasons why about a year ago in our heads, we created a new project, new lithium project in Russia. Actually, it was 2 years ago. And right now we start doing it and doing it very seriously. We already started engineering of the new factory, which will be located only 60 kilometers away from our existing one. And the capacity of this factory would be 20,000 tons of lithium hydroxide by the first quarter of 2022.
So you're saying in the first quarter of 2022, if everything went well, you'd have over 30,000 tons.
That's true.
Yeah.
And this new plant will be designed to convert from spodumene.
And the spodumene, your target for supply is where?
We already have some good understanding where we're going to take the spodumene material. Unfortunately, I didn't discuss with the people who is looking to participate in this project with us. Are they agree for me to announce it or not? But I'm not going to say the name. The idea is that we already found a company who is interested to cooperate. For everything else, definitely we're looking around the market who got the extra quantities of spodumene, because we're looking forward, there's still a lot of spodumene in Australia. There are some European projects is coming up. There are some more projects from Argentina. one project in Finland, maybe they will have some material available because they're going to be very close to us. So I think we won't have a problem to do that. But the second point, this factory will be designed to use this podium end, but in case it's one of our customers, existing customers or new customers would like to get more products for us, it will be able to use carbonate as well.
Well, that I think that's a critical factor because that allows you to play the market. Because right now it's easy either way because spodumene's cheap and carbonate's relatively cheap, but it won't always be the same dynamic.
Exactly. And this project, we just want to understand how we're going to realize it. We already got the land. Right now we have scope doing the, don't know how it's in English. The people who is measuring the land to correctly put the plant on the land.
Okay.
And the project, the technical project should be ready by the February 2021. And by the, I would say June, July 21, we're going to start construction. And I think 7 or 8 months will be enough for us to finish it up.
So when you look at a 20,000 ton plant from spodumene, so you're going to have a calciner and everything else. What's the estimated capital on a project like that? Because that's the interesting thing right now about the hydroxide world is Ganfeng's capital intensity in Jiangxi province is about a sixth of what Tianqi's finally going to spend on that Kwinana plant. I would think you'd be on the lower end of capital intensity, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, we will be on the lower end, but I don't want to look rude, but now we're not opening this information because we'll be able to open this information, our CapEx, as soon as we'll finish all the negotiations with our banks. As soon as we'll be done, we'll make a press release or I will do it in Twitter because you see, the Russia is quite close country. We don't announce anything, but when it's ready, we're happy to say, hey guys, just yesterday we opened the plant. We're happy to announce. That's what happened with our previous one.
I think you've been relatively candid so far. So, I mean, if you you always have to have secrets. So that's fine.
We really believe in our new project because the European part of Russia and Europe probably. We definitely will not be able to use the sulfuric acid technology, and we're looking for the new clean technology, which should give us low footprint on the ecological side. And we already got the information, give us very high quality battery grade on the end. So I think there's going to be quite modern production, even for all other companies involved.
Yeah, you should listen to the podcast that came out a couple of days ago because Dave Buckley talks about different processes. So
yeah, absolutely. This process is a lot of people, they've been hearing about it on the conferences, wherever. So we just believe in that and we would like to try it. So we almost made it almost a halfway in order to use it. And I'm sure we'll be successful.
Well, if you're sure, then I'm sure.
Good. At least two of us already.
Yeah, exactly. Only 7 billion more to go. This has been a great conversation, but I don't know. I don't know if you're a podcast listener, but at the end of the podcast, I always ask, we call rapid fire.
I'm ready for that. To be honest, I'm listening quite often, but I don't understand too much out of it because when you're driving the car, when you have time to listen it, sometimes the English words is just slipping away from my head, so I don't understand half of it.
I absolutely understand that. I always had trouble in Japan. Listening to Japanese television for me was always very difficult. Unless it was a native English speaker speaking Japanese, then I could understand him. So I'm familiar with that. Since you're ready for these questions, I'm going to...
I hope so.
Simple one. I've asked this a bunch of times, so if you've listened to the podcast, you may have heard this, but if you could have dinner with any person who's ever been alive, he's dead, we'll bring him back for you. Anybody, who would you want to have dinner with and why?
You see, the answer is very easy. All the people which I ever would like to have a dinner with, I already had. So I wouldn't do anything that I would just invite my wife again because everything I'm doing My wife is always supporting me, and I would use every chance to say thank you to her. And all other meetings, I would try to arrange by myself without dinners.
Okay, so you better make sure your wife listens to the podcast.
She doesn't, because she with the kids, making them go to sleep.
Okay, so what is the favorite book you have ever read that's had the most impact on you, and why?
I think the most impact on me, actually for me, it was a very hard book. That's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but the first time I read it, it was an English version, because I came to Corvallis as exchange student, and on the second month, I came to the English lessons, and they said, hey guy, there's the book, you need to read it. So the first time I read it, I didn't understand completely anything. I tried to translate, I tried to do many, many things. I tried to watch movie just to realize what's been happening there. And then after maybe 6 or 7 months in US, I just decided, oh, should I try it again? And I read this book, and at that point of time, I just imagined all these things. And I think this is one of my favorite ones, because it just shows how sometimes happened.
Yeah, and, no, that's a great movie. That was one of my all-time favorites.
So I would say this book made the most impact on me. I don't know why.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a great answer. I would never have guessed that. You could have given me 1,000 guesses, and I would have never guessed One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. All right. The final question. As you said at the beginning of the podcast, you're over 40. If you were able, with what you know now, to call yourself when you were 20 years old, with all that you know now as a over 40 guy, what advice would you give yourself?
You see, in Russia, we have one very good book, which I hated when I was in school. I hated when I was in university, but now it's the book which is just lying on my table in the office. This is the book of chemistry for last two levels of school, which was written by Glinka. It got the answers for all the questions I can find. I've been hating chemistry all my life, but now I am own with my partners, the chemical plant in Russia. And I'm looking into this book twice a day, because I don't understand what my partner is talking to them. So to realize, understand, I need the book. And he told, if you want to understand what I'm talking about, get the book and read it. So I would call myself and say, hey, Pavel, just read this book carefully. When you'll be over 40, you will use it a lot.
Well, three good answers. With that, I think we'll bring this episode to a close, but I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. I look forward to the day, hopefully not more than a year away, when we see each other face to face again. I'm not sure when the travel is going to start again, but it will be good to see you. Then you can tell me what the capital for your new plan is.
Definitely. One day I'm going to open all the secrets. And at the end of this podcast, first of all, I would like to thank you, because as I wrote you on Twitter, for me, it's a great pleasure that you invited me, because I've been thinking that only the big people can participate in the podcast with you. But now I realize that I also make a small step forward. And I would like to say thank you to all the people who've been listening for this hour, to my not perfect English, and maybe they will understand what I told. That's going to be
the
best answer for me.
Your English is very understandable. I don't think that's an issue at all. And
as my language teacher told me, your English is not good. Your English is good, but it's not nice and fancy. Not rich and fancy.
Yeah. No, it works. That's what matters.
Okay, perfect.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast. Pavel can be found on Twitter at PYASEV. He can also be found on the Halmec Lithium website on the internet. I can be found on Twitter at Global Lithium, on LinkedIn, or at the Global Lithium website, globallithium.net. And I'll close by saying, don't let your memories exceed your dreams.